Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastra Varidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Satya Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Summer, oh they already went home.
Yeah.
Is Janu?
Jablan.
Oh, okay. Because otherwise it gets too dark.
Tired.
Oh, that's why they don't come in the morning. That's fine. It's just, it's in the winter, you kind of just need to sleep more. Yeah. Okay, so now these 100 parvas then are put into groups, right? It's not, the 18 parvas are there, but actually it's 100 parvas in 18 groups. Does that make sense? Those 18 groups are also called parvas. So the actual main grouping is what would seemingly be the secondary 100, right? Does that make sense? But actually the 100 are the main grouping. You know, it's just that those tell the storyline, and then those are put into groups to, you know, bring out that you understand the context of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's important, so that you understand the situation the thing's in, because one thing in one situation may be nice, in another situation it's not as good, or less understandable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So now I think he's going to go through and tell the 18, and which ones of the 100 are in the 18. Okay? In the Adi Parva are contained Paushya, Paloma, Astika, Arivasa Tara, Samba, the burning of the house of Lak, the slaying of Hidimba, the destruction of the Asura Vaka, Chitrarata, the Swayamvara Draupadi, her marriage after the overthrow of rivals in war, the arrival of Vidura, the restoration means when they were brought back, Arjuna's exile, that means they're already in Indraprastha, the abduction of Subhadra, the gift and receipt of the marriage dower, the burning of the Kandava forest, and the meeting with the Asura architect, Maya. Okay, so that's where it ends. Right? So that gets them up through, they've already gone out once after the house of Lak, and then they've gotten they've been given the half of the kingdom, and they've established Indraprastha and everything and all that. That's all up to them. Because that's one thing, you know, them growing up and going through and then getting established, you know, in their natural position. Right? Then the Paushya Parva, so that must be the next one. So there's also Paushya Parva is a small one of 100, but there's also Paushya is a big one. Treats of the greatness of Utanka and the Paloma of the sons of... Now he's going to go through and tell what each one of these does. Okay, so this is all in the Adi Parva. Okay, the Paushya treats of the greatness of Utanka. Right, that's what's going to come up. Utanka goes through the dynasty of it'll go from, I think, starting from Bhrigu, right? Because he's like the head Brahmin. You know, Brahmins of course, but then are the sons, and he's the one that's like the ideal down his dynasty and everybody, because it's all connected. Because Utanka gets trouble from Takshaka. Takshaka gives trouble to Prakrit Maharaj. Mm-hmm. Like this. So then, with these different things, then the king decides, because his father was killed by the snake, you know, that happens, you know. But when it was brought up that it was done improperly, you know, he was acting improperly, and therefore needed to be corrected, then only the king took action like that. Because others, and there was one, Utanka? Utanka got problem with Takshika, and then there's another Brahmin got problem with snakes.
With the earrings?
Yeah, Utanka's the one with the earrings. Uh-huh. Then, but someone else, his
I
wife,
remember when
wife was killed.
Wife was killed, and then he swore that he'll kill all the snakes.
Yeah, yeah.
One snake told him, I'm not poisonous.
Yeah, yeah, because he was going to, you know, and there's the whole thing, he's non-poisonous snake. And so he was just saying, we non-poisonous snakes have to suffer the fate of the trouble made by the poisonous ones. You know, we don't bother anybody, but, you know, we still get harassed. Like, so it's between those three. That Brahmin, he had problem with snakes. Utanka had problem with snakes. And then Prickett had problem with snakes. So therefore, then Janamejaya decided, you know, we're going to have a snake sacrifice and finish these snakes. Like that. So that's why these things are all, it's all the back history. But in one history, then there's something behind that, and there's something behind that. Because first you have to find out where the snakes came from, you know, and then how they grew and the groups of the snakes, and then, you know, all these different things, you know. So Utanka, but then who Utanka, then his guru, and then who, and then his guru, and you know what I'm saying? So it's just, in other words, you're just telling basically why there was the snake sacrifice like that. Because that is, the reason that's there is because they're asking why was Nibbārat spoken. So then you give all the histories about that. Just like in the Bhagavatam, they want to know why it was spoken, where, how did they meet, and all this. So the first canto goes with that, right? Only after that, then Sukadeva Goswami starts talking in the second canto, right? So mm-hmm. It's a similar thing, like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You want to know the background. So the background is very detailed and explicitly described, like that. Posha treats of the greatness of Utanka and the Paloma of the sons of Bhrigu. Like that. Astika describes the birth of Garuda and the Nagas. The churning of the ocean, the incidents related to the birth of the celestial seed Uchashraiva, and finally the dynasty of Bharata, right? Because you have to know about Uchashraiva, because that's where then the whole thing with Garuda and his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like that. So the snakes are there, that's there, but then without knowing Uchashrava. But then he's coming out of the churning of the ocean. So then you have to bring up the churning of the ocean. Then you get Uchashrava. Yeah. Then you can get the, what is it, the two yeah. sisters then making a bet on that he's got a white tail or a black tail. You know? And so all those different things like that. And then naturally then you have to get in the nectar, because that came from the churning of the ocean, that's what was wanted. So they're all intertwined, all the stories. Does that make sense? So that's why it's so big. And finally, the dynasty of Bharata. So that's all in Astika, right? As described in the snake sacrifice of King Janamejaya. The Sambhava. Okay. Parva narrates the birth of various kings and heroes and that of the sage Krishna Dwaipayana. The partial incarnations of deities, the generations of Danavas and Yakshas, of great prowess and serpents, Gandharvas, birds, and all creatures. And lastly, of the life and adventures of King Bharata, the progenitor of the line that goes by his name, the son born of Shakuntala in the hermitage of the ascetic Kanva. This parva also describes the greatness of Bhagirathi and the births of the Vasus in the house of Santanu and their ascension to heaven. In this parva is also narrated the birth of Bhishma, uniting in himself portions of the energies of the other Vasus, his renunciation of royalty and adoption of the Brahmacharya mode of life, his adherence to his vows, his protection of Chitrangada and after the death of Chitrangada, his protection of his younger brother Chitravirya, and his placing the latter on the throne, the birth of Dharma among men in the consequence of the curse of Ani Mandavya, the birth of Dhritarashtra and Pandu through the potency of Vyasa's blessings, and also the birth of the Pandavas, the plotting of Duryodhana to send the sons of Pandu to Varnavata, and the other dark counsels of the sons of Dhritarashtra in regard to the Pandavas. Then the advice administered to Yudhishthira on his way by that well-wisher of the Pandavas Vidura, in the Malecha language, the digging of the hole, the burning of Purochana, and the sleeping women of the fowler caste. Fowler means hunters. Fowler means, fowl is birds, so fowler means someone who catches birds. for a living. With her five sons.
What does, what do you say, Mlecha language?
Mlecha language, because they were talking in Mlecha language.
But at that time, was no Sanskrit everything?
As you have Sanskrit, that is the main language for anything formal or like that in cultured circles and that. But there is also the local languages. You know, like, you know, over here they speak Bengali, they're Gujarati, these, that. So those languages are also always there. Those are like local languages.
Okay. So
you know, you talk in your house, you talk with your mother, you talk like that. You talk in the market. But, you know, in education and anything in the court and anything proper, then you speak in Sanskrit.
Okay.
Right? The literature is in Sanskrit, like that. Same time as there are groups of these local languages, there are the Mlecha languages, okay, like that, you know, tribals and all that that are outside. So then, speaking in that, only someone who's very educated would know that. Only like your top kings and other such Brahmins, okay, would know these various kind of things. So if he could speak in that, no one else would know what he was talking about.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Some of them, the Dura spoke to Yudhishthira in English.
Well, it says Mlecha language, so it could have been. Well, English, if you go back then, it just depends how far back it is. Because English back then basically was, you know, what you call nowadays High German. It's, you know, that old literary... Because it would be German at that stage, you know. The Norsemen were speaking the same language. So it was that whole, all the Germanic tribes, they all spoke the same. So in Iceland today... The language hasn't changed in 1,000 years. It's exactly the same pronunciation, spelling, grammar, everything. It hasn't changed one bit. How? So you can give them, you know, Canterbury Tales of Chaucer, and to them it's modern English. You know, for them it's normal language. They can read it, and that's, to them, is normal. Like that. So how far back it would go, it would be hard to say, because before the Germanic tribes, you had all the Druids and them. They were the farther back, how do you say, residents of Europe. They were driven back by the German tribes, the nomads from the whole Central Asia. They came in from there, like that. So then, you know, it's like. But it just means Mlechas, because there's always been Mlechas, so there's something that's there. In other words, it just means it starts to get so far from Prakrit, you know, it becomes much more speculative and just use. It doesn't have the still connecting of the grammar and all that. Does that make some sense?
Is it possible that the English was given out and was threatened with what's going on there?
Could be. What we're speaking now would be much more of a degradation, because you can see as you go back, even you go back to, you take these Aboriginal languages and that, grammatically they're much more complicated than modern English. You know, the Aborigines of like Australia or the Maoris, or even you go into the Pygmies and other, you know, tribes like this, their language grammatically is more developed than present modern colloquial English. Because modern English is just kind of it's just a street language, and it's been elevated to a very high position, but as far as its standards of grammar, it's actually a street language. It's used in a very refined and academic way, you know, like that. But it would, you know, does that make sense? Like that. But actually, grammatically, it's not a very developed language at all. You know, in fact, as time goes, it gets less and less developed. It's not like improving. You know, but it just means Mlecha means that those who don't follow the Vedic culture. But all the Prakrits are by people who are following the Vedic culture. But it's just a simpler language. It's like the house language. Like that. You know, and the common people would probably speak it more. But all your educated people, they would know Sanskrit.
Well, like, the Mlecha language, like you're just talking about, it's sort of like, right now, English is like in such a high position, yeah? But it's like punk language
is
not such a high precision.
Is it like that? Yeah, kind of like that. You know, it's a derivative of it, but it's a degradation.
Is there also malachas like in Treta Yuga?
There's always been malachas. There's always been fishermen and hunters, and some follow. And when you go outside, you know, they don't follow. Like basically, when you pass Gandhar. Even Gandhar, they're Malechas, but they're still kind of connected a bit to the Vedic culture. Once you pass Gandhar, then it's kind of like it gets lost very seriously. You know, Gandhar on this side, and you know. They're saying Gandhar means that means where Afghanistan is now.
But during Satya Yuga, the whole world wasn't really.
Basically, you still have these those, but they may not necessarily need to be because you know it's like. It's not so. If one has that attitude, one generally wouldn't be so much inclined. But still, there'll be. Just like there's animals and stuff to eat, so there has to be lower class people. It's just natural. But they won't be the prominence in society. Like nowadays, the lowest class of men are the ones that are prominent. Your artists, your musicians, and all this that are completely just. Not God conscious and absorbed in their own self, they're like the looked up to people in the society, you know. But as you go back in time, then they weren't, you know.
You're saying that in Satyuga there was only Brahma?
Probably mentions there's only Hamsas, you know, that was the class of people. So Hamsa, even a Brahma, means that they're self-realized. Like that. Does that make sense? So they would live simply and, you know, wouldn't work. Because you didn't have to worry. Also, in the Satya Yuga, you didn't have to plow the fields. The grain just grew on their own. There'd be so much grain, and people would only take just what they need, so naturally then grain would fall on the ground and just grow again the next season. You know what I'm saying? It would just always be there. But now, nowadays, then, you know, it has to be always planted because you take everything, even though you don't need it. And then other people come along and take away whatever's left, you know, because there's so many needy people. So, you know, life is much tougher.
So it seems like the Satya Yuga was a long time for everything to grow, you know, really well. I just sometimes I wonder how things could be, you know, interesting if everything was so peaceful and everything was just, you know.
Because they had no other needs, so therefore peace is fine. But if one doesn't have focus, or doesn't see, if one has satisfaction, then one is comfortable in whatever situation was in. When there's dissatisfaction, then there's need of constant variety and change. Like that. So that's the whole point. You know? That's all. So it's because of they're peaceful, then they're comfortable. You know, whatever is there is enough, so they don't need to endeavor beyond that. It's comfortable in that. Because people are just looking for a comfortable situation. But they get so accustomed to the mode of passion of ignorance that even if a comfortable situation comes, they don't trust it'll last, because nothing else lasts. So they also trust that won't last. But these people are pious. They're in a comfortable, in a proper pious situation, and they have faith in that, and so therefore it functions. Now they're getting farther away from eternality, from knowledge, and you know proper activity, and therefore the result of that of happiness. So people are miserable, have no knowledge, are lazy, don't have proper relationships, don't have trust in anything. That's just because they're getting farther and farther away from their own natural nature of Satchitananda. Right? While people are closer in self-realization, then they have faith in relationships, they know, you know, like that, they're comfortable, you know, like that, the desires are in the proper way, they have knowledge, they make endeavor, and their desires are fulfilled. You know? Does that make some sense?
Yes.
So it's just natural. Yes.
How is a self-realized person? How is What do you mean with self-realization?
Self-realization means they know the self, they know the soul. So ahamsa means they're on the platform of understanding that they're not the body, their soul. It means but realized.
Okay.
So they're not really, they're not affected by, technically by a conditioned nature. You know? They're not actually affected by that. But they're not necessarily conscious of God as a person. They may be, they may not be. Like that. But such a person has no problem that God is a person and has a form. He just may not know about it. What he knows is that everything is Brahman, and he's Brahman, and so therefore, you know, that's their interest, that's all. Paramahamsa means he knows God. He knows, in other words, he's liberated, but he knows Bhagawan. Hamsa means that he's on the liberated platform, but he doesn't necessarily know or hasn't developed that love for God. Right. So it's transcendental, but the realization is not as deep.
It's probably not according to the subject, but it's just that I've been really wanting to ask it for many days. I have my teacher share it once, but he said, because we were chatting that time, he said, no time, ask me again. And then I didn't find time to. So I wanted to ask you, I know it's pretty weird. But how can the ghosts of the Brahma Gayatri?
How can the
ghosts of the Brahma Gayatri?
How can they know it?
Yeah.
Because the only ghosts that know it are those who were Brahmins before, and as Brahmins somehow another activity happened that they became a ghost. So it's only Brahma Rakshasas would know the Gayatri.
Because I thought it's all Rakshasas that know Gayatri, and I was thinking.
No, it's just the Brahma Rakshasas.
Okay.
Like that. Rakshasas may or may not have been if they're initiated into
things.
Yeah, but they have their, you know, because they follow also to some degree Vedic culture and everything like that. You know? But they don't use it for God consciousness, that's all. Right?
I was just wondering, how can Rakshasas
go? It's not all Rakshasas. It would only be the Brahma Rakshasas or more cultured Rakshasas.
I was thinking before, so all Rakshasas are Brahma Rakshasas.
No. It's only Brahma Rakshasas. Yeah. Okay, then. The digging of the hole. Right, because they made a hole out of the house. The burning of Purochan and the sleeping womb of the fowler caste and their five sons in the house of Lak. The meeting of the Pandavas in the dreadful forest with Hidimba and the slaying of her brother. Hidimba and the slaying of her brother Hidimba by Bhima. Because sometimes it's Hidimba, Hidimbi. But also sometimes it's Hidimba, Hidimba. Right? The long will be the sister.
Uttara. Well, is this something like Uttara Kumar and Uttara?
Yeah, it's the same thing. The long letter is feminine Krishna. And the short letter is like Draupadi is known as Krishna. Like that. Because she's also black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same color as Krishna.
So why they are called by the same name, just the last word is elongated?
Because it means the same thing.
In feminine case.
Yeah, you have George, Georgina, you know, you have so many, even in the Western names, they have a male and a female form. Okay. And the slaying of her brother Hidimba by Bhima of great prowess, the birth of Ghatotkacha, the meeting of the Pandavas with Vyas, and in accordance with his advice, the stay in disguise in the house of a Brahmana in the city of Ekachakra. The destruction of the Asura Vaka and the amazement of the populace at the sight. The extraordinary bursts of Krishna and Drishtadumna. Krishna and Drishtadumna. And Ishtopadi and Drishtadumna. Because it came out of the fire. The departure of the Pandavas for Panchala in obedience of the instructions of Vyas, and moved equally by the desire of winning the hand of Draupadi on learning the tidings of the Swayamvar from the lips of a Brahmana. Victory of Arjuna over a Gandharva called Arangaparna on the banks of the Bhagirathi. His contraction of friendship with his adversary, and his hearing from the Gandharva the history of Tapati, Vashishta, and Aurava. His Tapati, she is, I think Kuru, not sure, it's either Kuru's mother or something in there. Tapati is right back there. She's mm-hmm. the wife of one of those great kings, because the Gandharva kept calling him Tapatya. And so he said, why are you calling me Tapatya? I've been called, Pandava, I've been called Bharata, I've been called Kaurava, I've never been called Tapatya. What's that? And then he related the history of how Tapati was one of the queens in his line. Mm-hmm. This Parva treats of the journey of the Pandavas towards Panchala, the acquisition of Draupadi in the midst of all the Rajas by Arjuna, after having successfully pierced the mark, and in the ensuing fight, the defeat of Shalya, Karna, and the other crowned heads at the hands of Bhima and Arjuna of great prowess. The ascertainment by Balaram and Krishna at the sight of these matchless exploits that the heroes were the Pandavas, and the arrival of the brothers at the house of the potter where the Pandavas were staying. You notice, as it gets into the Pandavas, it gets into more detail. Well, before it just says, Astika, this, that. Yeah. Because, in other words, you can understand what's repeated, what's brought out more. That's actually the theme of the work. Right? This is one of the systems of Mimamsa, how you tell what's important. Anything that's repeated, anything that's there at the beginning and end, what's in the invocation and conclusion, what's repeated, what's glorified, like that. What's pointed out is something special. So we see is here is everything about the Pandavas is always over and over again. Like in the before one, it's cut down to just the essence and only mentioned Pandavas. Here now it's bigger explanation, then so it's everything. But so that's why, see here the second chapter, remember it said that he wrote a short form of the Mahabharata in 150 verses, which is the first two chapters. Mm-hmm. So this is the second. So you see all the stories are all given in short form. Like that.
Extremely short.
Yeah, but it's also if you know the stories and you just have this, and then just from going from this you could relate the whole Mahabharata. Because mm-hmm. you know the stories, but you not necessarily remember the order and everything like, Sutta Goswami. Mm-hmm. Or Vaishampayana. So therefore from this then you could go off and go through, and then stories that you want to tell you can bring out, because let's say you have a short time, so then you'll go through this, and then those that you want to bring out, or someone has a question, then you'll expand. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Like that. The dejection of Drupad on learning that Draupadi was to be wedded to five husbands. The wonderful story of wanted a son-in-law.
Sons-in-law.
Yeah. The wonderful story of the five Indras related in consequence. The extraordinary and divinely ordained wedding of Draupadi. The sending of Vidura by the sons of Dhritarashtra as envoy to the Pandavas. To ask them to come back. The arrival of Vidura and his sight. And his sight to Krishna. The abode of the Pandavas in the Kandava Prastha, and their rule over one half of the kingdom. The fixing of turns by the sons of Pandu means who would be with Draupadi, because Narad wanted to establish that they shouldn't have any fights, so they should have some rule how they're going to spend their time with Draupadi, so nobody should get, they shouldn't fight like that. So they just made a rule when she's with one brother, in the room, nobody else should come in like that. So that was Narada. So because of that, then also then Arjuna was exiled, and then so many pastimes happened. So there's many purposes going on by all these things.
The funny thing is that Arjuna goes inside Yudhishthira's room with Draupadi to get his weapons, and then when he goes in exile, he gets married to three.
And he was supposed to be Brahmachari.
No, but Brahmachari. That was what Ulupi said. She said, I know about your vrata, but that means you're celibate with Draupadi.
Okay.
but says, I'm a different girl. I'm not Dropa, so. Like that. That was her argument, so couldn't say anything.
It's like, when you got divorced to the forest, came up and you talk to them and said, what boon do you want? They ask, oh, I want what's called to come the, I want to go and know you also recognize me there. But then they went as a villager. Then after, how did they, like, how am I supposed to say it? It's sort of where they sort of got found out it was them or something.
There's a point in where in Virat, way much later, we're coming up to it. Right? We're coming up to it that they will be...
Exactly.
They have to be in exile, but they can't be seen. But that's much, much later than this. So as we read, we'll get to that. Let me see if that's what we were talking about. Okay. The ruler of the happening and fixing turn. In obedience to the instruction of Narada, the fixing of terms. In like manner hath the history of Sunda and Upasunda been recited in this, right? Because that was the reason that they gave it. Because these two brothers, they were like twins. They'd done everything together. They eat together, everything together. But when it came to when Tilotama came, then each one said, it's my wife, your sister-in-law. The other said, no, my wife, your sister-in-law. They killed each other over this girl.
If Shiva and Brahman are all captivated, then it's...
That's also one of the reasons, one of the incidents where Indra got eyes all over his body just so he could look at her. A thousand eyes just so he could look. Because he had a drop of all the beauty of everything in the universe. Whatever is beautiful, a drop of that was taken. And that was all put together into Tilotama.
Tilottama.
Tilottama. Yeah, because it's one two little drop. And so all of them put together.
Yeah. Perfect drop.
This part of them treats of the departure of Arjuna for the forest according to the vow. He having seen Draupadi and Yudhishthir sitting together as he entered the chamber to take out arms for delivering the kind of a certain brahmana. This Parva then describes Arjuna's meeting on the way with Ulupi, the daughter of a Naga. It then relates his visit to several sacred spots. The birth of Babrubahan, the deliverance of Arjuna by the five celestial damsels who had been turned into alligators by the imprecation of a Brahmana. Right? Very nice pucker Brahmin boy there, so effulgent. These girls are going by and they said, hey, let's have some fun, you know? Try to make the guy fall down. So he just said, okay, you guys are... Because, see, the thing about a crocodile is a crocodile doesn't need to eat. It's not hungry. But if there's something to catch, it will catch it. So that's why the crocodile was chosen. They had no need of a man. He wasn't the man that they should be bothering anyway. But just because he was, they came and harassed and tried to catch him. Therefore, that's why being cursed as crocodiles is appropriate. You understand? And that's the thing. Alligators are different. They'll only bother you if they're hungry. If an alligator's full, you can go walk right up to it. It won't bother you. But a crocodile, it can be full and, you know, not need to eat, but it'll still attack you. So therefore, crocodiles. So.
To approach a crocodile, you need to be a knight.
In?
A knight with metal armor.
Even that, well, hopefully it's... I don't think they're so... They're not like sharks, so they still bite through it anyway. Okay, then... This part then describes Arjuna meeting with Ulupi, deliverance of damsels. Okay, the meeting of Madhava and Arjuna on the holy spot called Prabhas, the carrying away of Subhadra by Arjuna, incited thereto by her brother Krishna, in the wonderful car moving on land and water through mid-air, according to the wish of the rider. In other words, that's why Krishna made the point: is he's on my chariot, so you know, you yadus may, you know, all you want, get upset and want to go and catch him, but you'll never catch him. He's on my chariot. Because here it says he moves land, water, mid-air, however the rider wants to go. If he wants to go over the water, it just goes.
Arjuna stole the Subhadra. He was driving the chariot and Subhadra was fighting with the yaks. Something like that, or maybe opposite.
No, it would have been the other way. The girl won't fight. She may drive the chariot, but they won't fight.
Maharaj, that's why Krishna also made a point that who was riding the chariot? So they said Subhadra was riding the chariot. So Krishna said, then who kidnapped whom? Did Arjuna kidnap Subhadra or Subhadra kidnapped Arjuna?
Okay.
Is Krishna sort of like you don't kill a person on my chariot. It's my chariot. I don't want any dirty blood on it.
Okay. The departure for Indraprastha with the dower, the conception in the womb of Subhadra of that progeny of prowess Abhimanyu, Yajnasenis giving birth to children. Yajnasenis. That must have been Draupadi, because she's from the fire, Yajnasenis. Then follows the pleasure trip of Krishna and Arjuna to the banks of the Jamuna, and the acquisition by them of the discus, means the Sudarshan, and the celebrated bow Gandiva, the burning of the forest of Kandava, the rescue of Maya by Arjuna, and the escape of the servant, and the begetting of a son by that best of rishis, Mandapala, in the womb of the bird Sharangi. This parva is divided by Vyas into 227 chapters. Okay, here we'll get all the chapters. These 227 chapters contain 8,884 shlokas.
Oh.
That's very, 227 chapters. So this is the second chapter. So a little ways to go. Okay, now he got up to here. Chittarata Swayambar Sudhake the Kosha. Okay. So he didn't give all the names for all of them through here. He only gave them in the beginning. So he only when he gave only the name, he wrote only the name, but when he gave a description, then he translated it. Okay, but that's all the this is all in Adi Parva. Those are all the different parvas that were in here. So that would mean that there would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Looks like 17 parvas in Adi Parva. Mm. And then each parva is divided into chapters, right? Mm-hmm. It just have, you know, one part, a particular, you know, complete aspect of either a whole story or a major part of a story, like that. Okay, so the second, now we're on the finish the first parva on 18. These are all a little smaller because then first one's very big and then I think later on they get big again. The second is the extensive parva called Shabha or the assembly, full of matter. Matter meaning here, meaning subject discussions, topics. The subjects of this parva are the embellishment of the grand hall by the Pandavas, the review of their retainers, the description of the Lokapalas by Narada, well acquainted with celestial regions, right? Because they ask about all the they have this fabulous court, you know, the assembly hall. So Yudhishthira asks about the assembly halls that all the other big demigods have and the comparison and all. So then Narada Muni starts to tell about them. And as it goes, each one gets more far out than the other. So I guess the Brahmins where you see it, it's just existing a certain way, but as soon as you focus on it, then it changes.
Wow.
So it's constantly, every moment, it's just changing and completely, you know, so it's different. So, in other words, you just experience it. You don't try to analyze it. Because it means in the what is it? Paroksha, aparoksha means like when you're sleeping, if I ask you in the morning, did you have a good sleep, you can tell me yes or no. But if you're conscious of the sleeping, you're not sleeping, you're awake. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is his hall is experienced through aparoksha. You just experience it, but as soon as you try to look at it, it changes.
One day, and next you see there's a lion on the pillar, they say there's a peacock there, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's going on? Yeah.
Brahma's assembly hall is like that, how Vishnu's...
That's another thing. That's in Priya Bhagavatam Vita. Because it's also, it's not, doesn't... Because Brahma, because he's mystic, because the yogis go there. The Astanga yogis go there. So then naturally, being more mystical is for them important. But in Vaikuntha, it doesn't have to be mystical. It's just, it's Lord Vishnu's transcendental. So it can be, you know, its opulence is always expanding and developing, but it's a different thing. It's not done mystically. It's a natural manifestation. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The preparations for the Rajasuya sacrifice, the destruction of Jarasandha, the deliverance of Vasudeva, by Vasudeva, of the princes confined in the mountain pass, the campaign of universal conquest by the Pandavas, means around the planet. Yes?
That would mean going out of Jambudvip?
No, within Jambudvip.
Within planet Earth?
Yeah, just within, you know, for emperors here. So here universal just means everybody, because you can use universal meaning that it's a universal principle, means everybody accepts it. But it means within here, it means everything that was basically had any group of people where they would have a leader that you would conquer them, then that was there. If you get too far out, then you have a few, you know, wild men here and there. But so that would be what's India now, up into Nepal, up into to the lower part of Central Asia, and, you know, kind of this side of the Middle East, South India, and then up into Manipur and those regions like some Tibet and those other things down that would still be, that would be connected with the Vedic culture like that. Outside of that, it's just jungle.
So like they didn't conquer too much around Russian parts and all that?
No, Arjuna went north up to the northern Kurus, so it means past where humans can go. So that means he would go right out, he would go past Siberia.
Mm-hmm. I heard before that the India used to extend the, I think it's called Simukum or something.
Simukum.
Right, it's right in the border of Russia. I'm not a Simukum.
I don't know, but it would be the whole world was under the Vedic rule, also the other continents and things like that. But it seems in here they didn't bother going off this, you know, this same landmass. But previous, you know, in other ages then, they were lord of all the continents also, you know, because they had other kingdoms there. They didn't bother with them.
Marsh, like if you go out of India, then you start going to Russia, and then you go all the way around the world, right? But when Arjuna,
you can go that way, but you don't need to go there.
But when Arjuna went, then he started going towards.
Because he's
Kumaragos.
Going up. Yeah, they're going up. They're
so
not
he's not going like this. He's going up like that.
Yeah. Just the people, unless they're pious, they can't see it going up like that. Because it's just, you can't see it. And then if you are pious enough to see it, you can't get in there. So even Arjuna couldn't go into where the northern Kurus lived.
But he could go to another.
He could go to the, that's because he's taken there.
He's taken there.
Like that. But on his own as a human, they said you can go inside, but you'll see nothing. Like that, you know. So they just said, well, you know, why you're here, because they know of him and like that, and they know of Yudhishthira. So even they wanted to give something for Yudhishthira to... That burned Duryodhana so much that nobody can even get near the northern Kurus, let alone get there and have them give homage, you know.
What do you mean by the northern Kurus?
They're the ones that live all the way past the Himalayas and the snows and all that.
That means they're like demigods or something?
They're just, there's something in between. They're antarikshas, so it's But they're not demigods, but they're not regular humans.
So actually, the real, we can't see it, but actually Earth is like this and there's a wall going up over here.
It's not a wall, it's just the Himalayas are going, because this is, you're only seeing, these are only foothills. These aren't the, these are all just around the base of Meru. Meru goes all the way up to Septuloka.
Cool.
Like that. So these are not that big of mountains. Big, but not that big.
When Prabhupada saw Meru, then he saw Meru coming from the Himalayas?
He was seeing the ones where he mentioned that he was seeing it more from the Alps. You know, when he was flying through Europe, then he could see beyond. So the Alps are there, and then just kept going, and he could see that.
Where's Alps?
Alps are the mountain range that's kind of like in the western side of Europe. Goes through Switzerland and all that. I think
Sweden. Around Switzerland, Sweden.
No, Sweden's far enough. It's Switzerland. Yeah, Germany, Switzerland, probably northern, what do you call it, Italy, you know, and Austria, France, you know, it's that kind of like area.
Did they have ocean boats that time?
They would go for business, they would go over to Sumatra in Indonesia and do business there.
At like continental.
It wouldn't bother. Why do you need to go out to a bunch of tribals? You know, if you need bones, you can get it by your local tribals. You don't know. For Sumatra, they had a very flourishing kind of like Malecha culture there. But they were favorable to the Vedic, but they were just very, you know, kind of low-grade people. But they were appreciative of the Vedic standards. So they used to do business with Sumatra. You know, Malaysia is where all the sandalwood is growing. You know, you get it in south, you get it here and there, but that's where the really high grade. You know, because you go around from Bengal, you go past Bangladesh, and you go into Burma, and then you keep going down around the peninsula, then that's Malaysia, where all the sandalwood grew. So then if you cross out the ocean, then you get to Sumatra. It's the biggest island that I know of in Indonesia. Because Indonesia's made of, I think, 1,000 islands or something like that. But easier than going over land than that, you would just go by boat.
So, couldn't Ramachandra use a boat for going to Lanka?
Could, but he's there with a monkey army, so they don't have much of a boat. could, but that's 800 miles. So it's quite... like that. You know, so that's a big extent. But to Sumatra, it's not that far. It's quite close.
In the Shiva Bhakti, it says that Yudhishthira had another Rajasuya sacrifice for the battle.
No, that was not a Rajasuya, that was Ashwamedha. Yeah. Because basically, that I know of, you can only do it once in your lifetime, and there's certain restrictions who can do it. Ashwamedha, anyone can do. You can do so many of them.
10,000.
But the Rajasuya, you can only do one. And even if it's been done, if the person who's done it is still present, no one else can do it. Otherwise, Duryodhana wanted to do it, but he couldn't because Yudhishthira was still present.
What's the benefit of
Ashwamedha? They were using it for purification. But it's considered a very big pious yajna, like that. But all of these karmakanda yajnas are for getting to the heavenly planets. And depending on how big and elaborate, then that high of a planet or that long you could stay. But still, when it's over, and you gotta come back. So that much endeavor and all that, if you put that into Krishna consciousness, you go back to Godhead. You know, so why waste the time?
What's the role of the horse?
What's the role of the horse? It's the medium through which the horse is sacrificed.
Like when it goes through all the lands? When people.
That's going around that it goes, it just wanders freely, and wherever it goes, then the king either pays homage or comes out and fights. You know, they stop the horse and won't let the horse go. Then there's a fight. But if he comes out and pays tribute, then they move on.
So it's like one type of way how to like in sovereignty over the other kingdoms.
Yes, but it's not as, but it's just where the horse goes. While the Rajasuya, it has to be every king. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's considered a bigger sacrifice.
So Duryodhana also did 2 years too much? Duryodhana gave
arms to eat. Yeah, that's something.
What about if the horse goes through the same place?
But there are Kurus, so the same kingdom.
No, what about if it goes into the same place again, like going to the kingdom?
Mm-hmm. It wanders wherever it likes.
So the person has to give alms again?
No, no.
It's your one.
You don't have no more than you have.
Would the people in other continents aware that the leadership is emperor? Then did they have any business or involved in the good chicken there?
From what I've heard of, most were all from here, unless they were coming from other places. But there were some wild characters there. There were people there that wore armor, full body armor, and rode on horses. You know, so the knights in their shining armor, that was, you know, old, and that's not something new. That was before they used to do that. But those are all like Malechas and stuff. They think like that.
Yeah. So, again,
the point is it's not developed. I mean, if you think about it, what was there in Germania before the Romans went in there and cultivated it? You had a few scanty tribes here and there. And that's only when they came in. Before, because those places technically are uninhabitable. I mean, sadhus may go and live in these places because of doing austerities. But grihasthas generally wouldn't live in these kind of places, because they just, you know, it's just too difficult of a lifestyle. The scripture recommends that you don't live farther north than where banana trees and coconut trees grow. If you go beyond that, then where they don't grow, it's not fit for human life. So that's why only the tribals do that thing.
So you know when they had castles, like and stuff, and they rode on horses with knights and stuff. Was that before they had the Kurukshetra War, or that was after?
Depends.
After.
If you're talking about Europe, it's after. But if you're talking Vedic time, they've always had castles and they've always had horses.
But like men on chariots and stuff, they shoot the arrows from the front and stuff like that.
So that's before. Yeah, that would be, you know, like that. It means even recently, it's always been there. The kings rode right always on chariots.
Nowadays, there's no castles. There is castles, but there's no king of the castle. Yeah.
Okay, the arrival of the princes at the Rajasuya sacrifice with tribute, the destruction of Shishupal on the occasion of the sacrifice, in connection with offering of Argya. Oh, okay, yeah, on the occasion of the sacrifice in connection with the offering of Argya. When they're going to offer the Argya, that's Argya, that's when Shishupal got upset. Bhimasen's ridicule of Duryodhana in the assembly. Envy at the sight of the magnificent scale on which the arrangements had been made, the indignation of Duryodhana in consequence, and the preparations for the game of dice, the defeat of Yudhishthira at play by the wily Shakuni, the deliverance of Dhritarashtra of his afflicted daughter-in-law, Draupadi plunged in a sea of distress caused by the gambling, as of a boat tossed about by the tempestuous waves. The endeavors of Duryodhana to engage Yudhishthira again in the game, and the exile of the defeated Yudhishthira with his brothers. These constitute what has been called by the great Vyas the Shabaparva. This parva is divided into 78 sections, O best of Brahmanas, of 2,507 shlokas. Okay, so we'll end with that one, then we'll go on to the. So we'll start with the third part.
So, Maharaj already went about 10,000 shlokas.
Yeah.
many shlokas does Bhagavatam have?
18. I mean, here you have, oh, it doesn't tell the names. But it's like the first one is big, third one's big, fifth, sixth, seventh are big, and then 12th and 13th are big, and everything else.